Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and happy St. Patrick's Day. Welcome to Unlimited Realities. I'm your host, Lisa Zimmer, and today we have a wonderful guest, author Gina Lake, who wrote Loving in the Moment. Gina, thank you so much for being with us on Unlimited Realities today.
Hi, Lisa. Thank you for having me.
Oh, hello. So wonderful to have you. Now, I loved your book, Loving in the Moment, and I'm going to just dig deep and start right off with talking about moving from our ego into our essence. Can you talk to us a little bit about how it's so natural to be in our ego when we're in a process of moving into a relationship and what that means in regard to finding our essence and moving from that ego way of thinking of ourself and moving into a feeling essence element?
Yes. Well, as human beings, we are programmed really to live from the egoic state of consciousness, from the ego. And what I mean by that is we live based on our thoughts. We live from this place of believing that we are our thoughts, that we are what we think, and that what we think is true and real and valuable and a good guide for life. And until we really begin to start examining our thoughts, become aware of them first, and then examine them, and really see where, and ask, kind of, where are they coming from, and how true are they, we are pretty much caught in a kind of a automatic pilot where we just respond to our thoughts. We think our thoughts, we say whatever we're thinking, and we're a little bit unconscious and not tuned into the greater possibility of living more from the heart. Because this place of living from the mind, from the ego, and I want to make a distinction between the regular mind that we use to think and calculate and function. There's a functional mind that we all use and need. But this egoic mind that we identify so much with and think is who we are all of those I thoughts. I need this, I like this, I want this, and he shouldn't have done that, and she shouldn't have done that, and I did this in the past, and all of these stories that create the sense of self, of being a me. This ongoing commentary in the mind is the ego, and it creates a state of consciousness that's stressful, often negative, in which we're always striving and wanting something from outside of ourselves and not recognizing the greater being that we are, which I call essence. When we drop out of our mind, which everyone does when they get very absorbed in something they love doing, or when they're just feeling happy, or when they finally get what they want, what their ego wants, they drop into this place of quiet, contentment, peace, which I call essence, which is our true nature. When we live from that place, which is very possible, once we learn to sort of move out of that egoic kind of thinking and just be present in the moment, once we learn to live from that place, then love flows from us and our relationships work. But when we are in this place of ego, it's all about me. I want this, I like this, you need to do this for me. And we're always looking for other people to make us feel good, to make us love them, to make us feel like we are loved, to do things for us, to fix our life. The ego creates problems. You know, our mind is always generating problems. Oh no, I need to do this. I'm too fat, I'm too thin, I'm not rich enough, I'm not this enough. It's always creating problems and a sense of lack, because that's just the egoic state of consciousness that we as human beings are programmed with. It's our it's our automatic state, and it's the default position that we have as human beings. And it's a state of lack. And when we are in relationship from this place of the ego, from this place of lack, we're always looking to other people to do things for us, to love us, and we want to change them so that we can relax and be happy. And we want to change them according to our likes and our dislikes, our conditioning. You know, if I like
right.
my house to if I want like my house to be neat, then I want you to be neat so I can feel good. That's a place of suffering and a place that doesn't work in relationships. So when you
right.
can kind of own your own conditioning and just drop into this place of essence, this place of being very present to individuals, very present to yourself, present to life, you don't need other people to make you happy. And from that place, love flows, and the outflowing of love is, of course, a very attractive place. And then
right,
you find
right.
Then you find that you actually do get love from other people, but it's not because, and you're glad to have it, but it's not because you even need it. So,
now,
you know, that's the language I'm using to just kind of, you know, try to orient around that.
Okay, and I love that you take the ego aspect of our thinking in relationships and separate it a bit, because there is a part of ego that is our thinking, rational, decision-making mind based in our left side of our brain. However, necessary to kind of get a handle on so that we're not operating on an egoic aspect of ourselves and projecting that outward into our personal relationships or even in our business world. But you have this as coming from ego thinking and moving into essence. And in regard to essence, when we move from our ego and we move into our essence, what are some of the qualities that we can see in ourselves that we're softening, that we're becoming more in tune with who we truly are and our essence, and stepping outside of, you know, having that idle chatter that's going on in the brain? Are there actual aspects that we can see as our heart starts to open and we start to, you know, envelop that essence of ourselves?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not some mysterious unfamiliar place, because everyone, when they're quiet and still, and which is why meditation is so useful, it enables people to be quiet and still, but everyone experiences a stillness of the mind and a quieting and a dropping into the heart from time to time during their day, when they're just finally resting or finally, you know, letting go of thoughts and just, you know, just letting themselves just be in whatever experience they're having, or be lost or absorbed in whatever experience. The way you know that you're in essence is that that all is well. Life feels like all is well. You feel a contentment, a peace, a fullness, a completeness, and a sense of gratitude. That's one of the most common signs, and a really easily distinguishable sign. It's when you feel grateful, when you feel thankful, and you're noticing the little things in life that are just so beautiful and wonderful. It's a place where there's a celebration and a gratitude of life, and from that place there's just a natural outpouring of love for every little thing, every little experience, for the fact that we have hands that are so amazing, and the fact that there's this amazing sky that we live under, and every little thing you can see and experience, you just feel such gratitude and amazement in. And this is our natural state. As essence, we love life. We love life, and we're amazed by it. And we love the adventure of life.
And so in that experience of recognizing our own individual essence, would you say that in addition to that, we also become much more aware of possibly our sides of our personality and our development that needs to be tweaked a tad, like controlling or manipulative methods, or trying to have things go a certain way, or like old programming. You talk a lot about how old programming, and it's so very true. I loved this part in your book, and where that projection of our old programming, whether it was, you know, how we were raised or how society kind of influenced us, really interferes within personal sacred relationship, and has to be looked at kind of in a neutral way, where it's not a trigger. Can we discuss a little bit about how programming comes into play in our relationships and what we can do to evolve through that?
Sure. When we are in the egoic state, when we're really believing our thoughts and we're really feeling that we need certain things to be happy, and that's our conditioning. You know, I need chocolate. I need my house to be neat. I need you to do this. You know, we really believe these thoughts that I need this to be happy and I need things to be this way, and or we might believe negative self-images, like, you know, no one will ever love me, I'm always screwing up, or things like that. And these are actually just thoughts, but when we believe them, they take on a certain reality, and other people also respond to them as if they're true. When we are able to see that these are just thoughts and they don't actually have reality, we attain a certain objectivity. We step back. We can step back from these thoughts, step back from the conditioning, and take a look at them. And from that place of objectivity, we can free ourselves from the negative, limiting, and untrue thinking that causes problems for us in our lives individually and within our relationships. So this place of essence is very valuable, and this is why meditation is emphasized in so many spiritual teachings, because meditation mm-hmm. teaches you how to move out of that mind, to not be so identified with it that you're really believing it and convinced of it. It helps you to take a step back from it and look at it and be able to say, do I really want to believe that thought? Is that thought really true? And you know, what does that do to me if I believe that? And then you have a choice. Then from this place of objectivity, which is essence, you have a choice whether to believe that thought or not. And you can, in a sense, recreate your reality, your experience of life, by making a good choice of not believing a negative thought, but just being in the present moment. The alternative to believing our thoughts and paying attention to that ongoing commentary in the mind, the alternative is just to be here now and to be very present with whatever is happening, and the doing and the speaking kind of naturally arises from the present moment, from this being essence that we are. You know, who we really are is what's living this life. It isn't who we think we are. Who we think we are isn't living this life. It's the actual thing that is animating our bodies is an amazing mystery. It's a spirit. It's the spiritual being that we are. It's this presence that that comes through us, and it acts and it speaks. And when we stop following the dictates of our mind, then we find that there's just a natural speaking and action that comes from this being. And of course, everyone acts from their spiritual self, from essence, throughout their day, in addition to following the ego. It's kind of a mixture. People follow their mind and they follow their conditioning, and they also just spontaneously act from this place of essence too. So the spiritual path is really more about becoming more grounded in essence and less the pawn of the mind and the negative thinking. And so it, you know, it's a a path of moving more and more fully towards embodying essence in our lives and away from the egoic state of consciousness, which is our sort of default position.
Right. And in accepting our programming or accepting our conditioning, say we look at different aspects of ourselves, and you gave some very you gave some examples, as in, you know, I like chocolate, I like a clean house. Now, say you look at yourself and you look at the aspects of who you are and what triggers you positively, what triggers you negatively, and you come to terms with, okay, so I like dark chocolate and I like it every day, and you're okay with that. Can that be something that you put in a perspective where it does not come off as a projection in a relationship where you have to bring me dark chocolate every day? Or, and I'm using this as a naive, you know, tool or example here, but can we look at parts of ourselves and say, okay, so that is who I am, I'm in check with that, and I'm not going to let that interfere in my personal relationships? Or when it does come up and I start to see that you know, green-eyed monster or whatever the issue is, you know, I'm not going to act on it. Can we look at parts of ourselves and in regard to going through the essence process, or in regard to tapping in and claiming our essence more fully, can we also look at aspects of ourselves and not necessarily condemn it as, oh, that's ego, got to run, but more as, yeah, you know, I got some work to do, and tweak it where it's not necessarily being a projection.
Yes. One of the key points that I make is take responsibility for your own conditioning. So if, and this was a major revelation for me when I came to see this, but if I want the house clean and my husband isn't neat and clean, then that's my conditioning, because he doesn't care if it's neat or clean. That's his conditioning. If,
right.
I'm going to get into trouble, though, if I require him to clean the house to my standard.
Right.
So taking responsibility for your conditioning means, okay, if I really want it to be that way, then I need to make the effort to be that way and not expect others to fulfill my conditioning for me, to come up to my standards. We tend to think that our conditioning is the right conditioning. So, you know, have you noticed that?
Oh, yeah. It's the comical humor of the world, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's like, well, everyone's house should be clean. You should be cleaner. Don't you realize that? And so we try to make our partner match and fit our conditioning so that we can relax and be comfortable and so that we can have it our way. So it's like, do you want your conditioning more than you want love? Because,
right.
You know, if you're going to hold your conditioning as so important, you're going to have trouble in your relationship, because everyone's got different conditioning. It's totally unique. Our conditioning is totally unique. There's not another person in the entire world who has conditioning exactly like us. And that's why relationships are so challenging. We have to learn to live and let live, to let other people have their conditioning, and to take responsibility for our own. Either change it, either change our own conditioning, or don't expect other people to be like us.
And, right.
Yeah, so this is actually, it's a very simple principle, but we don't seem to have learned this. It doesn't seem to be part of what we learn in relationships. And so one of my principles is, you know, don't make your conditioning more important than love. And that will really transform your relationships. And then also that relationships are such a wonderful opportunity to heal, to see our conditioning and to heal it, resolve it, to move beyond it. Because a lot of it is just creates internal stress for ourselves anyway. And so, you know, and back to this cleaning example, if, you know, if I'm a clean freak, that actually is pretty uncomfortable inside me also.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm married
right.
to somebody who isn't clean, it's actually an opportunity for me to relax around that issue, for him to teach me that it's okay to not to have some mess around once in a while. You know, it's okay
right.
to not have everything perfect, and that's a blessing. So relationships are also in our lives, I think, to help evolve us out of our conditioning, because if we don't learn how to somehow overcome our conditioning or be at peace with it, we're going to have difficulty in our relationships.
And it's a great point that you tend to bring in a relationship to address those conditionings, even if you're aware of them or you're not aware of them. And it brings me to a couple that I know, and he was diagnosed obsessive compulsive disorder, which is that neat freak tendency. Mm-hmm. Where every book and every spine of every book was you know, just so and measured on his bookshelf, and everything was in its place. And his wife would come along and see, you know, he's been spending 3 hours cleaning the house, and she'd come in from work, and she'd purposely knock over a line of books just to knock him out of that kind of mentality. And ironically, this marriage lasted. I mean, that's what blew my mind, was that it actually was something that they could learn from each other, and he didn't take offense from it. Because, you know, typically when we have something so ingrained in ourselves and someone comes in intentionally to trigger that, it can be, you know, quite tumultuous, to say the least. But we've got aspects of ourselves that are coming up in our conditioning to be healed in relationships. And I find that as a very, very powerful statement that you just made. Talk to us about, you have a statement in here in regard, it's a chapter of your book, and it's regarding how honesty is not necessarily the best policy. And I'm intrigued by this in regard to, you know, explain this to our listeners on where we go with our heart and our truth and our compassion and speaking to our beloved or in relationships. Because a lot of times people think, well, if it's the truth, I can say it. Well, a lot of times that's, you know, it's for your ego to say it, not necessarily for the better of the good.
Yeah, exactly. And so the point I'm making with honesty is not always the best policy is if the honesty is your ego's honesty, that, and it's hurtful to the other person, then it actually isn't the truth. You know, there are lots of ideas that go through our minds that aren't true and that are cruel and mean. And that isn't really the truth. You know, from essence, there's a certain bigger truth that when it's spoken causes people to relax and feel good and return to essence themselves. And so if something you say to someone causes them to contract and be hurt, it may very well be coming from your own ego. And so an example, for instance, you know, to say, you're fat, you know, I'm just being honest, you're fat, or even to say it, even to say it a little nicer, looks like you've gained 10 pounds. That would maybe
right.
be honest and maybe be true. But what does it serve? What does it serve?
Right.
So I'm pointing in my book always to serving love instead
mm-hmm.
of serving your own ego. Now, the only reason someone would say that to somebody is because they have an agenda, maybe to tell their partner that they should lose weight. And or
right.
they might be trying to get back to them. There might be, you know, it's actually a disguised judgment to say, looks like you've
right.
lost, you've gained 10 pounds. And these kinds of things are very damaging to love and relationship. And people do it all the time. They speak, you know, they speak disguised judgments or blatant judgments. And it undermines love and trust in a relationship. But they do it for their own, they do it for themselves. They have some kind of egoic agenda behind that. So it's really important to try to speak from a place that is going to create more love, not a place that's going to cause more tension, conflict, or unhappiness or sadness, or cause the other person to feel bad. I also want to say we're not responsible for the other person's feelings entirely, you know, because
sure.
You know, there are things that sometimes we have to say something and they might take it wrong, you know, and or it just might be a difficult truth for them to handle, if they're hurt by it, then they also need to kind of look at how they're hurting themselves by what they're saying about it within themselves. So, you know, it gets kind of complicated, but I also explain that in my book, I think.
Yes, your book is very thorough. And, you know, what it comes down to for me is it's a common bond of respect for human being and for soul to soul. Because if you are coming from your heart and you're coming from compassion and love or empathy or unconditionalism as much as possible, then you don't want to trigger somebody, piss them off, hurt their feelings. You know, there's a lot of things you don't want to do when you're coming from love. And so if you're not coming from that heart, and you're not coming from that essence of love where you really want to heal, help, and support your fellow man, then, you know, that's the check-in for yourself. If you've got something where, you know, it's coming out as a target or a trigger or a negative, you know, or a left-handed compliment, love those. Those are just really rich. But, you know, it really makes you look at who you are and what you're putting out there in the universe. Whether it's because if you're treating someone else like that, notoriously you're treating yourself that way, consciously or subconsciously. So we have to get back to loving ourselves. And when we love ourselves, it makes loving another so much easier. So there's that whole piece that, you know, in regard to not having to say everything, not having to be completely honest all the time and trigger people, we also have anger that comes up. And justified or not justified, we all are human beings. We have emotions, and anger is going to happen, whether it's somebody who you see treating another person unjustly or somebody who attacks you or triggers you. There's going to be moments where you get pissed. How do we move through that anger?
Yeah, of course, you know, and when anger is arising, when it's what's happening, then that's what is, right? So this whole idea of being present to what is, living in the moment, if anger is what is, then investigate it, take a look at it, but don't get try not to get caught up in it. See, this place of being present in the moment is a place of awareness. So if anger comes up and you feel it in your body, you know, you find yourself wanting to say something, you notice that. You notice that. You say, wow, look at this. Anger's arising. I just said this and I want to say this. And you just you stop and you notice and you become aware. And you know, you might not be able to become aware when you're caught up in it. So if you can't be, if you weren't aware then, at least afterwards, take a look at what happened and say, wow, what did I tell myself that caused me to be angry? And this, again, is taking responsibility for your feelings. Because the truth is, if you're feeling angry, nobody else caused it. You caused it by what you said about something, about some situation, or about something someone did, or about whatever, about life or something. So if you're feeling angry, then you mentally told yourself, he shouldn't have done that, or life shouldn't be that way. It's almost always a should in there about how it shouldn't have been the way it was. And that anger arises, and there can be a self-righteousness. The truth is that if something happened, it happened. And to argue by saying it shouldn't have happened only creates anger in you, which is a negative emotion. It's unhealthy for you. It's unhealthy for everyone. why create it. You actually have the power to not create it. Once you begin to be able to be more aware of what's going on in your mind and how that creates negative emotions, you become empowered to not have to experience negative emotion. And when you see that they all come from some kind of thought, and sometimes thoughts are unconscious, so we're not even aware of any kind of thought that created a negative emotion, but they can become conscious. The more you investigate your thoughts and what's going on in your mind, the more these things that cause negative, these thoughts that cause negative emotions can be seen through and brought out into the open. When they're brought out into the open and seen for the lies that they are, they can't cause those feelings anymore. So it's actually possible to get free from negative emotion. It doesn't happen overnight. It takes a lot of diligence and awareness and willingness, a lot of willingness to not go there, because, you know, we, on a certain level, we love our negative thoughts and feelings. We love to be the victim. We love our self-righteousness. And if you want love, if you want good relationships with other people, you have to learn to not love your drama, not love your negative emotions, not love all of that, all of your negative thoughts and your negative self-images. Those are the things that interfere with relationships because they keep you caught up in the egoic state of consciousness.
Okay, and then, you know, for that's a great place to evolve to, but the majority of people can't even grasp that concept because they're so in the mode of reactionary response that when anger does come through, and sometimes, you know, there's moments of anger we all experience. I mean, if somebody, you know, went and attacked one of my kids, I am a pit bull. So, I mean, it would, you know, you will see me angry. You will see me pissed, and I will get my way. So, you know, but I mean, how can we use anger when it does come up so we don't feed into it, so it doesn't escalate into something that could be completely blown out of proportion, or even to use it as a healthy motivator on some aspect to evolve ourselves into more of a peaceful, loving soul being?
Well, there's strength and then there's anger. And if you look at anger, when you're really caught up in anger, it isn't really a very effective state. You actually don't win people over. You actually don't act very effectively. But there is a strength that is sort of essence's counterpart to anger, you could say. You know, like when you brought up the example of protecting your children. Now, there's an inner strength that just says, no, this is not okay. And acting from that place of strength, of just knowing what you want and being clear that with someone that this is not okay, you know, to act,
right,
to treat my children this way, that's strength. And see, it doesn't, you really don't have to be screaming at someone to make that point. And in fact, you'll make it much better if you come from this place of the strength of essence than this screaming, irrational place where who knows what you'll say. You'll probably, you know, see, when you come from a place of anger, egoic anger with other people, then that triggers their egoic state and their anger.
Right.
And there's no resolution from that place. Someone's got to drop into essence. Essence it's a strong and rational place. It doesn't attack the other person. It just speaks the truth. And the truth is heard by people, you know. People know the truth when they hear it. And they're more likely to apologize and say, oh, my gosh, you're right, I'm sorry, if you come from that place of just direct strength.
Okay, so you're interpreting anger as going off and screaming. What if anger comes from a place of being forceful and, you know, you take control of the situation and there's no screaming involved, but you're pretty pissed off? and you take control of the situation and you make sure everybody knows that there's an unjust situation that you're taking control of, and they also know you're pretty pissed off. So where does that fine line come in regard to not going off like a screaming banshee, but actually coming from, you know, a strength and a firmness that you're not going to take any crap, but you're also letting everyone know this isn't right, I'm annoyed, I'm upset, and let's shift this. I mean, is that what you're talking about? That's a strong essence?
Yes. That's a good question, because I think that you can have anger coursing through your body and still be expressing yourself from this strength of essence.
Right.
So that
your
speech is not coming from the ego. It doesn't mean that you're not feeling the emotion of anger. So I'm glad that you asked that to clarify that, because I don't mean that you might not be feeling the physical experience of anger, but you're not indulging in how the ego would act it out. Instead, you're finding that deeper place of strength that is speaking truth rather than attack the other person.
Okay, because sometimes I do have to step into that very assertive essence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
It's not a nastiness, but it's definitely being assertive.
It's really good to make that distinction, because so many people think that being spiritual or being in essence is being passive, is being weak, mm-hmm. is being nice all the time. But when you're living from essence, there is a clear knowing of what is true and right for you or at a particular time. And so if something is not right, there's a clear assertive assertion that no, this isn't true for me, or this isn't right for me right now. It's just
wonderful.
That you don't, but there's a cleanness about how it's expressed that doesn't create problems with other people. They can hear it. You know, they can hear it, and they don't feel beat up as a result of it.
And again, it comes back to mutual respect as soul to soul, because if we're respecting each individual as a soul, as a being of God, then we're not going to want to throw a lot of nasty on them. So we're going to come from a place of as much respect and integrity as we possibly can. Can we talk a little bit about the levels of relationship as we move through romantic illusions and really get into the essence of a true sacred relationship versus like a fantasy?
Yeah. Well, this is a big subject. Where do I enter?
We can take our time.
You know, so physical attraction tends to be the thing that is prominent when people are dating, and that and when we're younger, it seems to be the most important thing in the world. What we discover as we mature is that people's physicality is not nearly as important to love as many other things, and it's not nearly as important to relationships and causing them to endure as other qualities. And in fact, you know, relationships based on physical attraction or physical chemistry, if there aren't other factors that create a bond between people, that relationship is not likely to last that long. So there are other things that are much more important than that. But our ego tends to overemphasize physical appearance, in large part because our culture especially, but many, many cultures emphasize physical appearance as being the be-all, end-all. It's almost like it's equivalent to love. You know, your true love that you imagine looks a certain way and acts a certain way. And so we all have fantasies or ideas about what our true love is going to look like or should look like. And those ideas can really get in the way of actually recognizing our true love when he or she shows up. Because life brings us people, doesn't it, Lisa? You know, we're not really...
Yes, it certainly does.
We don't necessarily choose the person we're going to be with so much. You know, life throws us together with people. And we mm-hmm. fall in love, don't we? Falling, there's not a lot of control in falling, is there? We fall in love with, you know, and who knows why we fall in love. It might be karma. It can be just physical attraction and ego. It could be the soul's deepest desire for us to be together. We don't really know why this feeling of falling in love happens. It happens for all sorts of reasons, but when it happens, it's compelling, and we can't say no to it. So, you know, it's kind of funny that we think that we can choose or somehow create through fantasy or you know, determine who we're going to fall in love with or who's going to be in our life, because there's actually quite an element of mystery to it. We end up with certain people because it's compelling and we want to be with them. And like I said, sometimes it's just a physical attraction. And, you know, that can be purposeful. We learn from every relationship. So it's not like, you know, exploring just a superficial relationship or having all relationships have some value in teaching us something about what we need in relationship, what we like, and so on, especially early on in our mm-hmm. 20s. And so, you know, we really need to find out. But for a lasting, enduring relationship, there are certain things that are really important, and that's certain similar values, a certain, and by that I mean even on a really deep level of our souls are here for maybe similar purposes or have certain thrusts or drives that feel meaningful. You know, if you're in a relationship with someone who doesn't get you, who doesn't understand why you are so passionate about what makes you your heart sing, that could be very difficult. And yet sometimes those relationships work. But what a blessing it is when we find someone who is just really in love and supportive of what makes us passionate and what we're in love with. You know, that
okay.
we feel at home with that person. You know, and to me being in love with someone is an experience of feeling totally at home with them, feeling like they are your own self. They are in sync with and supportive of what you love and what you are like, and they, you know, laugh at your jokes, and, you know, maybe not always, but, you know, you feel like you can just be who you are. You can just be yourself, and you can just relax. And isn't that what everyone wants? We all just want
Certainly.
To be able to just relax and be in essence with someone. So those are
well,
the things, not how much money they have, what color their hair is, how much they weigh, you know, how, you know, this kind of thing. You know, there are so many other things that are more important than the things that when we're dating we make so important. And that's ironic, isn't it? When people are dating, the things that they make important end up being the things that are least important in an enduring relationship.
Right. And that's one thing I want to address, because you were just talking about relationships that actually can work when one person doesn't totally get the other person. Now, wouldn't that be accepting a less than ideal relationship and kind of like taking out the bucket of sand and inserting your head kind of in a denial aspect that this is really a relationship that serves our greater good? I mean, you know, help me with this.
Well, you know, it's so complicated, this subject of relationships, in that there's no formula about what is, you know, whether someone should be in a relationship with someone or not, you know. So You know, it sometimes people need to be in a relationship that doesn't work just to learn what doesn't work. You know,
right.
just to learn to be assertive, just to learn to assert themselves to get out of it. And so in that sense it serves, you know. And
right.
And then they move on and they won't perhaps create that kind of relationship again. So you know it seems that people need to be on my many years of counseling, it seems that they need to stay in their relationship until they are so clear they don't want to be in their relationship. There are a lot of people who are in a relationship and it's not quite bad enough to leave it, you know,
right.
Or there's too much good that's kind of
right.
That's holding it together, but there's really a lot that isn't that great. And you know, maybe they're just going through a bad period and it'll blow over and whatever is good will come to the forefront again, or maybe not. But sometimes it's a matter of just hanging in there until they are really ready to just leave, till it's just really clear to them that this isn't working for them anymore. So a lot of it, there's a psychological process that goes on within people where they end up needing to kind of change internally before they're ready to take that jump, even though maybe everyone outside of them might be saying, why are you in this relationship?
Right.
But they just
right.
may need to be in it until they're done with it psychologically, till they feel they are clear and ready to leave. So
right.
it's kind of a mysterious and tricky thing.
And that's, you know, I'm glad you did bring that up, because that brought me back into my humble heart, having been in a relationship married for 16 years and knowing the last 5 years of my marriage that things weren't so kosher. They weren't cool. They weren't, like, moving in the direction that of evolving. And so when I found for myself that this wasn't just a bad spell, that this was a place of me going in one direction and him kind of staying on the same rung that he's been on, it took me a while to really take my head out of the sand and realize this isn't working anymore. So I do,
yeah.
you know, understand where you're saying that you do kind of have to stay where you're at to kind of figure out and feel through what your problems and issues are, so that you don't repeat that, so that, you know, those are issues that can be addressed and healed within yourself, so that, you know, you don't leave door number one and walk into door number two and it's, you know, same monkey with a different mask. So it's
yeah.
you know, you've got there's a lot of lessons to learn through relationships, aren't there?
Oh, so much. Yeah, it's you know, the question is this something I need to change within myself, and are the problems something I just need to accept, or is it time to move on? And it isn't easy to answer those questions, and it takes a lot of, you know, soul searching, and it can take some time, and everyone has a lot of investment in a marriage. You've got structures, you might have children, you've got finances.
Mm-hmm.
It is not an easy thing at all to be honest with ourselves, and there's a
right.
lot of denial that goes on. I've been divorced twice, and there's a lot of denial that goes on before we're ready to just say, you know what, this isn't right for me.
Right.
And, mm-hmm.
Right.
And it's just natural. Yeah, it's just natural. You don't need to feel bad about yourself for not seeing it sooner.
And also with not seeing it sooner, you may have had little inklings of it, but as you were saying, I have four children, and at the time they were all under one roof. So I did take that into consideration in regard to, dear God, how am I going to support four children? So,
yes, of course.
You know, and it was, and I had at that point, you know, been helping him in his business, so it had evolved into a successful business. But so there were a lot of, you know, pragmatic reasons of why to stay, but at the same point, always good
That's
to make
right.
that decision of growth.
We build structures. We create structures in our life, and no matter how right change is, it can take a while to change those structures and to move out of them. They, you know, this is a very sluggish plane of reality. We have actual, you know, physical things we have to deal with.
Right, and it's unfortunate that we can't just all live in essence 24/7, but we do have to keep ourselves grounded as well in regard to making our decisions and moving through that, but also needing to stay true to our essence and ourselves. And in doing that, we move beyond our conditioning and beyond our differences, and we're looking at, you know, things through a different perspective and actually looking at problems differently when we come out of our you know, we're so right and self-righteousness and move into essence of looking at things from a different perspective. Doesn't it become a little bit more gentler in regard to dealing with one another when we can kind of, you know, bite our tongue and listen more and consider the other person's perspective? Because, you know, whether we agree or not, it is their truth. And again, it comes back to that mutual respect that is the seed that needs to be planted within that sacred relationship. How can someone look at a problem, say infidelity within a marriage, how can they look at that differently? Because there's some people where they would look at infidelity and that would be it. That would be the end of the relationship. And there's other people who work through infidelity and actually improve their relationship from that. So let's talk about this, because I'm finding this as a pattern in my clients right now, especially people in their 40s and 50s who've been together for 20-something years, and you know, infidelity is starting to creep in to a lot of relationships. How can we look at that and come to terms with ourselves and still honor ourselves and not be a pushover and not just, you know, be a doormat and say, oh, well, it was a mistake, okay, I take you back. You know, that personally, that's not going to fly for me, but some people it does. So talk to us a little bit about this.
Well, there's no one-size-fits-all here. There's no formula.
Right.
Each individual case is different for what is true on a deep level for the people who are experiencing infidelity. Infidelity is often a sign that there's something wrong in the marriage that's not being addressed. Or it might be a sign that one of the people is simply not really a monogamous person. And, you know, there are a lot of non-monogamous people who get in monogamous relationships without realizing that they really aren't the kind of person who can settle down with one person. You know,
That's a great point.
And that's not even acknowledged really very much in our culture, but everyone is monogamous. They're just not cut out for it. And so it really depends so much on the two individuals and what's right for their growth. And the answer always lies in one's own heart and, you know, finding what's true within one's own heart. And so if it feels true to forgive, then you forgive. If it feels true to move on, then you move on. But this, you know, of course, takes quite a bit of spiritual development to be able to discern that. And that's what counselors like yourself and me are able to often assist people in sorting that out in the moment. So, you know, and
great answer.
And also, you know, when people are in the midst of that infidelity, they're going through a process of evolution. The couple is going through a process of evolution, and in the very beginning, they both might be so incapable of forgiveness and anger, but who knows, 4 months down the road, they might find a place where they feel they might be in a different place. So, you know, it's difficult to answer this question because people aren't static either. Infidelity triggers a process within the couple. And the couple may evolve out of the problem, or they might evolve out of the relationship. And you just are not quite sure, and you have to kind of help them along as they're going through this process. So there's not necessarily even one answer. You know, there might be a different answer for one point in time than another point in time.
And don't you find in working with your clients that infidelity is never the issue? It's always the byproduct of something that actually lost itself within the marriage. Again, we come back to a loss of respect, a loss of communication, a loss of connection. Because infidelity, to me, what I have experienced through others, is it's never the act itself. It's always something that was an impetus to create that act. And so there was something that actually was lacking within the union, like you were saying just before, that there's actually a lack within that union that created that person to look outside of the marriage. You know, without regard to someone being not a monogamous person. So that aside, if the person is naturally able to be monogamous, it would be a situation that led them into that direction, would you not say?
It boils down, again, to people's conditioning. How are they dealing
right.
with their individual conditioning and the conditioning that comes up within the relationship? If they're really dealing with their conditioning, then it's possible that infidelity wouldn't have happened, you know, if the person,
right.
there might be, you know, there's something that's not being dealt with. And, of course, it's difficult to deal with these things, and people aren't taught how to deal with these things. So naturally, infidelity and other problems happen. But there is often a way, if people are willing, and that's a big if people are willing to look at their conditioning and see, you know, what's interfering with them being fully in the partnership, or what's interfering with them being happy with the other person. You know, there's some conditioning that interferes with them being happy with the other person or being fully in the relationship, but not everyone's willing to look at their conditioning, take responsibility for it, and see what they can do about that. You know, and for many people, they just act out, you know, what happens, and there's nothing else they can do about it.
And I think a lot of times people are afraid to look at their conditioning because in looking at their conditioning, they're looking at themselves as being wrong or being bad or being deficient or dysfunctional. And instead of looking at it with a compassionate heart and saying, hey, we all have crap. We all have stuff to go through.
Right.
This is my little pile of crap I'm going to deal with, and this is my issue, and this is what I know I have to work through. And not being so critical upon your own soul, because we're not in here to criticize and keep ourselves condemned. We're in here to love and to express that love. And if we can't love ourselves in our darkest, deepest moment, we're never going to be able to accept someone else's darkest, deepest moment and accept them and love them truly and fully. So it really comes back to our own essence and our own heart and really developing ourselves and loving ourselves. And
yeah,
I have loved this conversation. We have like a minute and a half left. Can you believe how quickly this went? Gina, this was great. Let's let the listeners know where they can get a hold of you and your website. And
RadicalHappiness.com is my website. There's lots to read, to listen to watch, a lot of free things on there, a blog, a monthly newsletter. You can get a free ebook for signing up for my newsletter. I've written 8 books, and so Loving in the Moment is just one of many. And what I write about in all of these books is about how to be present, how to live from essence, how to be in the moment, how to come from love. And again, it's radicalhappiness.com.
Thank you so much, Gina. This has been a wonderful show, and I've absolutely loved talking to you. This is a great topic. Thank you so much for being on Unlimited Realities, and I wish
you much
success on your books. Your book's beautiful. It's a wonderfully written book. I love Loving in the Moment. So thank you again for joining us. Thank you, listening audience. Thank you for joining us as well. God bless you. Everybody have a wonderful week.
Thanks, Lisa. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Gina. Bye-bye.